You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we have a very special broadcast. When I say special, I'm not just whistling Dixie. This is very special. Remember I told you I was going through boxes of videotapes? We literally have, you know, boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes. We have probably several thousand videotapes. And a long time ago, right after Waco occurred, there were just a few of us who went down there to look for the truth. Linda Thompson was one. I was another. I broadcast from Waco while it was happening. And then Linda Thompson made a videotape called Waco the Big Lie. That videotape woke up America. They weren't listening to me. They weren't listening to anyone else. No one was listening. They weren't paying attention. It took a videotape to do it. And that videotape was Waco the Big Lie. It got the government's attention. It got America's attention. Without Linda Thompson and without her videotape, Waco the Big Lie, there would never have been congressional hearings on what happened in Waco. There would never have been a Waco, the rules of engagement. No one would have ever questioned what happened in Waco, Texas. And then when she was ridiculed, and then when other people, propaganda agents of the New World Order, came out with their versions of what happened and attempted to discredit Linda Thompson, she didn't shrink into the shadows as so many people do. She came out with another tape called Waco 2, The Big Lie Continues. I remember we ordered that tape, and we paid for it. I don't remember ever receiving it, and I know we never sold even one copy of it. And today I found out why. I found two boxes of videotapes addressed to Carolyn Nelson, who was my assistant at that time, at our old research center address off of Schoolhouse Road, or School Bus Road, here in Eager. The first office that we had when we moved to this part of Arizona. The boxes had never, ever been opened, which means Carolyn resigned them directly to storage, and I never even knew that we had them. And I'm not saying anything bad about Carolyn. You know, maybe she thought that's what she was supposed to do. So we never sold that tape. I never knew we had it. We never played the audio portion on the air, like we did with Waco the Big Lie. What gave Waco the Big Lie the kickoff that it had and guaranteed sales all over the world was the fact that I played the audio portion on this broadcast, The Hour of the Time. People began ordering that videotape from Linda Thompson and from us, and we were the only authorized agent besides Linda Thompson authorized to sell that tape, or any other of her tapes, for that matter. Everybody else who sold her tape stole it from her, ripped her off, and never paid her a penny. We always purchased the tapes that we sold directly from Linda, or when she gave us license to duplicate them, we split 50-50, right down the middle, and we never failed to pay her for every single tape that we ever sold. I've just discovered we have 80 copies that have never been played, never been opened, are brand new, that we purchased directly from Linda, has her label on them, They are in her packaging. And those, as far as I know, are the only copies of Waco 2, The Big Lie Continues, in existence that are not used. In existence anywhere. So tonight you're going to hear the audio portion, because we've never done that with this tape on the Hour of the Time. And it's about time that those of you who never understood the truth of Waco hear the truth. The tape is longer than this broadcast, so you will hear part one tonight, part two tomorrow night. You'll have the weekend to think about it, and we'll discuss it live on the air with your phone calls on Monday night. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, get ready to hear the fruits of the labor of a great American hero. And by the way, if you want to know who's not on our side, listen for who attacks Linda Thompson. Whoever attacks Linda Thompson is, without any doubt whatsoever, the enemy.
In this update, we're going to examine a few, though certainly not all, of the lies told by the ATF and FBI in their official independent investigations of Waco. We invite inquiries from the media. In fact, we dare the media to finally publicize the truth. And we challenge each member of Congress to demand and conduct congressional inquiries into the events in Waco. But first, we're going to show you why the government lied. This photograph was taken at the front door of the Branch Davidians' house the morning the ATF arrived. If you examine it carefully, you can see there was a child outside as the ATF began firing wildly. The features of the child in the photograph were deliberately blurred by someone to prevent recognition. This alteration can be seen by the naked eye examining a print from the negative. The alteration is more proof of the depths to which people have stooped in covering up the truth about what happened that day. The child has been identified as probably being Cyrus Koresh, David Koresh's 8-year-old little boy. After the raid, these agents were captured on film running with a small body to an ambulance. If these agents were carrying an adult, you would see legs or some part of the body extending below or beyond the agents themselves. Other children were killed that day, too, as a helicopter fired down into the house. Annetta Richards, one of the grandmothers who came out with the children, told the world that she and the children had been fired down upon by the helicopters. Children who left Mount Carmel the day after the raid drew pictures for the psychiatrists who interviewed them.
And then as I asked her, is there anything else, she took her crayon and went. And I asked what that was, and she said that was bullets.
More proof that the helicopter had fired down on a room full of women and children. Dick DeGaren, the attorney who entered Mount Carmel during the siege, also said he saw the room and bullet holes where a helicopter had sprayed the roof of the home, killing a nursing mother and children in the room. Unfortunately, he didn't share this information with the public until after the fire, nor did his former college classmate from Baylor University, FBI Director William Sessions. And in the tape-recorded conversations between the Branch Davidians and the McLennan County Sheriff's Deputy, known as the 911 tapes, the Branch Davidians frequently refer to the helicopters firing in on them from overhead, and they are clearly terrified of them.
The chopper with more of them.
What?
Another chopper with more people and more guns going on. Here they come.
All right. Wayne, come.
Or firing. That's not us.
David Koresh, in the 911 tapes and in a radio interview, said that the ATF killed his children.
Let me tell you something.
Yes, sir.
You see, you brought a bunch of guys out and you killed some of my children. We told you we wanted to talk.
This photograph shows one of the helicopters used by the government on the day of the raid. This helicopter has a 308 machine gun mounted in the doorway. Notice the words United States Army on the tail, contrary to the government's claims that the three helicopters at Waco were unarmed National Guard helicopters. Remember how government officials frequently told us that the Branch Davidians were abusing the children, as if this raid was for the children?
What impressed me is that the Bureau, time after time, asked Koresh for some evidence that the children were okay. The Bureau sent in videotapes asking Koresh to do something to prove that the children were okay. Negotiators consistently asked that the children be sent out. We did not receive verification that the children were okay.
The report admits that Janet Reno lied when she told us that David Koresh had refused to send out videotapes showing the condition of the children. It says, that night the Davidians sent out a videotape of the children in the compound. The negotiator's log shows that when the tape was reviewed, there was concern that if the tape were released to the media, Koresh would gain much sympathy.
Now, that tape was never supposed to have been released, ladies and gentlemen. Through our contacts in government positions, we were able to obtain a copy of the tape, which we have made available ever since we laid our hands on it as Branch Davidians' last will and testament. Many of you have purchased a copy of that tape, and you have seen it. That's the tape that the report talks about. That's the tape that the FBI had in their possession. That's the tape that Janet Reno blatantly, bold-faced, lied about.
These two men, Olayitan Oyetumbi and Gary Spaulding, drove day and night from South Bend, Indiana to bring baby food and chicken feed requested by the Branch Davidians to Mount Carmel. As you can see, they were very peaceful. Yet they were arrested. The crime? Bringing baby food to Mount Carmel. This occurred only 3 days before Janet Reno claimed that the government assault with tanks was out of concern for the children. In these scenes from the day of the fire, shown in Waco, The Big Lie, you can see that a tank was over the outdoor underground tunnel for more than 2 hours that morning. You can see agents getting in and out of those tanks over the underground bunker. And you can see that smoke was pouring from the underground bunker less than 5 minutes before a tank smashed the end of the house. The tank collapsed the house down onto the trap door to the underground bunker. Anyone in that bunker was trapped. No one in the house would be able to run to the safety of the bunker to escape the deadly gas and flames. Autopsies showed that many children died of blunt trauma. On the Maury Povich Show, Coroner Rodney Crowe told how those children died.
3 children had blunt force trauma, but it was from the falling concrete in the bunker that fell on them. There's an opening in the top of the bunker, 8 feet approximately diameter, and large chunks of concrete fell on these people.
21 of them died of gunshot wounds. And the rest died of smoke inhalation and, of course, suffocation due to being buried in debris when the bunker collapsed.
So now we know why the Treasury Department, the White House, and ATF and Department of Justice were so desperately lying to us all along. We were told every day that this raid, the gassing, the attack on the house, and the destruction of evidence had all been because of concerns for the children.
We had concerns for the children.
The big lie continues. The ATF is under the direct control of the Treasury Department. As head of the Treasury Department, Lloyd Benson would be ultimately responsible for any wrongdoing by ATF. Yet it was Benson who chose the so-called independent investigators. Each of the three so-called independent investigators Benson chose had been involved directly in the planning, execution, or cover-up of the police firebombing of the headquarters of a group called MOVE in Philadelphia that resulted in the fiery deaths of MOVE members in a situation similar to Waco. According to the introductory letter from Treasury Secretary Lloyd Benson to President Clinton, the committee's report was supposed to be a vigorous and thorough investigation of the events leading to the loss of law enforcement and civilian lives near Waco, Texas, on February 28, 1993. But on the cover of the report, it doesn't say it is a thorough investigation of the events in Waco. It says it is an investigation of Vernon Wayne Howell. Even in the Treasury's report, which was not released until September 1993, the ATF persists in calling the Branch Davidian House the heavily armed fortress-like compound, even though by now we have all seen that the house was a simply constructed Masonite exterior frame home. And on page 3, it begins, "in memory of," and then names each of the deceased ATF agents. There doesn't seem to be any question of whether this was going to be an independent or vigorous and thorough investigation of the events on February 28, 1993. The overall perspective for the raid was spelled out in an internal Treasury Department memorandum from Christopher Kyler, Assistant Treasury Secretary for Enforcement, to Mike Langan before the raid, in which Kyler matter-of-factly says that the agents will be raiding a Branch Davidian Seventh-day Adventist church. It doesn't get any plainer than this. They spelled it out for us. The government set out to conduct a military assault on a church. This same memorandum specifically says that the ATF raid will be assisted by state, local, and military authorities. Again, spelling it out for us, every level of government participated in this military terroristic attack on a church full of 140 men, women, and children. The results of the supposedly independent investigation, known as the Treasury Report, were released September 29, 1993. It berated ATF leadership for failing to cancel the raid when they knew the ATF had lost the element of surprise. ATF Director Stephen Higgins and others were forced to resign with full pensions. The ATF tried to make it seem that they were admitting error by blaming leaders for losing the element of surprise.
And we had our plan down, we had a diversion down, all was put into effect, and they were waiting.
What we had was someone who eliminated the element of surprise, which is what we needed, and in so doing, our agents walked into an ambush.
The main problem we had, I don't believe, is that we were outmaneuvered or outplanned. The problem we had is that we were outgunned. You know, they had bigger firearms than we had. They were able to shoot through doors, and due to that, you know, a lot of
our
agents were hurt.
The ATF had the Branch Davidians under surveillance for over a month from the house across the street. They knew the land was completely flat. There could be no possibility of surprising the Branch Davidians with 100 men arriving in cattle cars visible from miles away. The Treasury report admits that ATF's own public relations person, Sharon Wheeler, contacted several Dallas television stations several days before the raid. The lie that the ATF lost the element of surprise was aided by the media while showing us this very edited piece of footage of the first day of the raid over and over, as an announcer would say, the ATF was met with a hail of gunfire. And just in case you somehow hadn't heard the ATF claim that the Branch Davidians were waiting for the ATF, within a week after Mount Carmel was burned to the ground, NBC television aired the government's official propaganda as a movie, showing Branch Davidians at all the windows with guns waiting for the ATF to arrive. If you have doubts that this was propaganda, consider that the Treasury report repeatedly states that U.S. Army Special Forces planned the raid and trained the agents. The ATF raid leader is former Special Forces, and even advisors to the independent investigators included Delta Force Special Forces. Then, get a copy of this Army Psychological Operations Training Manual, a how-to on propaganda that says that making a movie is an important element of military occupation. Another lie told by ATF in the official report says, on Wednesday, February 24th, ATF rescheduled its raid from Monday, March 1st, to Sunday, February 28th, because it expected the Tribune-Herald to publish its Sinful Messiah series on Sunday. The warrants were signed on February 25th and expired on February 28th, the day the raid took place. The raid was never moved up a day, and these warrants weren't filed with the court until March 1st, either. The ATF is lying when it claims they lost the element of surprise, and the ATF is lying when it says it moved the raid up a day so as not to lose the element of surprise. So were the Branch Davidians waiting for them, or is that a lie, too? John McLemore is a reporter for KWTX Channel 10 Television in Waco, Texas. Both he and cameraman Dan Maloney were present at Mount Carmel on February 28th, the day ATF raided Mount Carmel, and they claim to have filmed the scenes of the initial raid. In one of the first Associated Press newspaper reports that came across the wire services on February 28th, John McLemore is quoted as saying, "They came right in, parked right by the front door, and made a frontal assault on the building." Another article across the AP wires on February 28th said that, according to witnesses, federal agents hid in livestock trailers as they drove up to the compound. As three National Guard helicopters approached, the 100 law officers stormed the main home, throwing concussion grenades and screaming, "Come out!" There is no mention of any barrage of gunfire from the Branch Davidians in these first reports. And in actuality, the Branch Davidians reacted the way any American would react when his home was broken into by armed terrorists. They first called the police. They dialed 911.
911, what's your emergency?
There are men, 75 men around our building.
Okay, just a moment.
In the tape recordings of these conversations, we can hear the fear and distress of Wayne Martin as he says,
"Yeah, I'll tell them there are children and women in here and to call it off."
Brad Branch, a Davidian who was also interviewed by phone, described it this way.
When they jumped out, David opened the door and put his hand out and says, "Now hold on, we have women and children in here." And bullets started hitting the door and all through the foyer, and that's when we slammed the door.
The Treasury report also says Koresh appeared at the front door and yelled, "What's going on?" From that statement in the report, we have an admission by ATF that Koresh came to the door. The Treasury report next claims that the agents identified themselves, stated they had a warrant, and yelled, "Freeze and get down." Examining the official report for plans for the raid, there is absolutely no plan for any agent to first knock at the door or announce the agent's presence. The ATF planned the entire raid using dynamic entry teams, who were to burst through the front door, underground bus, and upstairs windows simultaneously. David Koresh, in an interview with CNN, said it happened like this.
They started firing at me. And so what happened was is that I fell back in the door and the bullets started coming through the door. And so then what happened was some of the young men and stuff started firing on them. And I was already hollering. I was saying, "Go away." You know, I was hollering, "Go away. There's women and children here. Let's talk."
The Treasury report next says, but Koresh slammed the door before the agents could reach it. Gunfire from inside the compound burst through the door. The force of the gunfire was so great that the door bowed outward. Then gunfire erupted from virtually every window in the front of the compound. This photograph, taken by a Waco Tribune Herald reporter, proves that all of these claims in the Treasury report are absolute lies. Since the door is still cracked open, it obviously was never bowed outward from the force of shots inside, which would have slammed the door shut before any bowing could occur. If any shots had been fired from inside, the exit holes of the bullets would have split and chipped paint and the outside of the door. The holes in the door are neat and uniform and are obviously holes made by bullets shot from outside by ATF. There are no Branch Davidians at any of the windows. This scene of the front door was also filmed from a side view by KWTX Channel 10. Here, too, you can see that no one is shooting at the agents behind cars at the front door. No bullets are hitting any of the car windshields or throwing up dirt around the agents. In additional footage of the initial raid that was released through the media, we see the agents climbing the ladders to the roof on the side of the house. These agents were supposed to be on the roof within 33 seconds after arrival, according to the plan. Machine gun fire is clearly heard in the forefront coming from the ATF. ATF agents yell, "Too much live fire," telling their agents to quit firing wildly. Many of these agents are carrying MP5 submachine guns and rifles. Notice that no one is shooting at these agents either as they climb the ladders. Once on the roof, these agents do not come under fire, even as they laboriously break into a window on the roof, while a fourth agent lies on the roof. Listen carefully to the background sounds as we watch this again. A helicopter is close overhead, but there is a cut in the film from a close shot to a wide shot, and the helicopter sounds change abruptly. The ATF has claimed none of its helicopters had guns that day, but in each segment where a helicopter approached the house, we also found a cut in the tape footage.
I'm rolling. So we're back to the car and give me another tape then.
This agent is carrying a smoke grenade. He has already drawn his 9mm handgun before he goes in the window. Notice that he is also carrying grenades on a belt on his leg. The agents toss smoke grenades into the room before they enter the window.
So we're back to try and get me another tape then.
After these agents get in the window, there is an obvious glitch in the tape here too. American Justice Federation did not make any of these cuts in the videotape. We are showing you the tape segments exactly as we found them. We can prove this tape was shown by other TV stations with exactly the same cuts in it. Reporters for KWTX Channel 10 in Waco, Texas, supposedly shot this video the day of the raid. The vice president of news for KWTX Channel 10 is Virgil Teeter, and his phone number is 817-776-1330. Call him and ask why he has not released all the video footage to the American public, and why the footage that has been released has been so badly altered, and who did the altering. The film picks up again with this agent tossing something into the room. Now, in Waco, the Big Lie, we showed you how this agent first tosses a grenade into the room. He withdraws his hand, then shoots into the room. Shots begin coming out of the room. He is then hit by a round in the back of the helmet. He falls to the roof, grabbing the back of his head. Then he gets up and slides rapidly down the ladder. One of the problems with this tape footage is that the sounds do not coincide with what can be seen. Notice that in the segments immediately before and after this scene, you can hear a lot of noise in the background.
I'm rolling. Go back to try and get me another tape then.
First, let's turn off the sound altogether and examine where the bullets come from. The agent tosses a grenade. He pulls back the curtain and fires into the room. Then shot one comes from inside the room. Shot number two comes from overhead. Numbers three and four come from inside the room. Number five makes three holes at once from the inside. Six goes out from inside. The agent fires again. Seven comes from inside and strikes the agent. Shots 8, 9, and 10 come from overhead. Eleven and 12 come from inside. 13 comes from out in the yard. 14 comes from below the roof. And 15 makes three holes at once from the inside. There are at least six separate weapons firing in. There are at least six separate weapons firing in this scene. The gun the agent on the roof is firing, the gun that fires the single shots from inside, the gun that shoots 2 3-round single shots from inside, the gun firing from overhead, the gun firing from below the roof, and the gun firing from out in the yard. These weapons should not sound alike, and they should not sound the same distance from the camera. Now listen to this scene with the audio as it was released by KWTX Television in Waco, Texas. You can hear the sound of the grenade exploding, but after that, the bullet sounds are virtually identical, and there are places in the tape where there is absolute total silence, or the background noise cuts in and out, all signs of heavy editing. In this 3D computer wire illustration, you can see the trajectory of bullets 2, 8, 9, and 10 from overhead, showing that the bullets came from almost directly above. It will be important later on to know the locations of various objects in the yard. Here we see a gray shed where three agents will be seen later. This is a blue tarp covering equipment near the house. These are storage tanks out in the yard. One of the Branch Davidians buildings was a high tower located here. The camera filming all these scenes was located approximately here, way out in the yard, using a long telephoto lens. On March 5th, the ATF released a detailed story to the Dallas Morning News, complete with diagrams and descriptions of where the four agents who were killed had died. ATF's story and diagrams showed that all three of the agents who had gone in that window had died inside that room. Unfortunately for ATF, Keith Constantino was later interviewed by Current Affair, and Constantino described three, not four, agents who went onto the roof and into the window. He said he was one of the three agents. He says he made it out the window and down the ladder. He says two other agents were killed, but he doesn't say where. After Waco, the Big Lie was released in June 1993, the ATF began claiming that none of the agents who went into the window were killed. The story the ATF comes up with for the final report claims there were actually two groups of agents going into two windows on the same wall. The ATF claims there was a three-man team entering the east window and a four-man team entering the west window. Keith Constantino is listed in the Treasury report as having been on the three-man team. The agents who were killed are listed in the Treasury report as having been on the four-man team. Four agents can plainly be seen on the west side of the roof at all times. So yes, Constantino's team made it off the roof safely, but three of the men on the west side of the roof were killed. In this letter from Ronald K. Noble, answering a congressman's questions, Ronald Noble says, none of the three agents who went into the compound through the second-story window were killed. The review found that the fourth agent neither fired his weapon into the room nor threw any grenades, diversionary devices, or any other item into the room. Conway LeBlue and Todd McKeon were on that roof. They weren't on Constantino's team, and they were killed. These photos of the ATF evacuating men from the roof were taken after a ceasefire was called after the Branch Davidians called 911. And in the scenes of agents being removed from the roof, one agent's body can be plainly seen where it fell, a trail of blood streaming down the roof. Watch this scene carefully. First, you hear someone call Keith, and Keith answers, "Yeah," from the blue area. Was this Keith Constantino who fell to the ground from the roof? Shots are fired. A clank is heard. Notice that there had been a pry bar on the roof a few minutes earlier, and that this clank could have been the result of this pry bar being knocked off the roof by an agent getting out of the window. A cameraman, apparently referring to the helicopters, comments that there are two of them right over our heads. Shots are fired from the blue area again. The camera is shooting through the base of the storage tanks toward the blue tarp-covered area. The telephoto lens often makes objects appear closer together than they really are, as you can see here. This is a blue tarp covering equipment near the house. These are storage tanks out in the yard. The camera filming all these scenes was located approximately here. The other agents you saw earlier were located here, climbing up ladders on this side of the house. This agent, shown where he was shot down on the roof, was probably shot by his own men from below. The trajectory of the bullets here are in direct line with the direction in which he fell. The four agents who were killed that day were Conway LeBlue, Todd W. McKeon, Robert J. Williams, and Stephen D. Willis. Three of the four agents who were killed that day had been President Clinton's bodyguards during his presidential campaign. Clinton himself stated this in his address to the Treasury on March 18, 1993, and named these agents by name. The new head of the ATF is now John McGaugh, himself the former head of the Secret Service, and in charge of presidential bodyguards. Two of the agents who were killed that day, Todd McKeon and Conway LeBlue, had appeared 18 months prior to the raid on the television program 48 Hours in a segment about the ATF. In the official report, all of the agents who were killed have an asterisk next to their names in the report. The asterisk means that none of these agents was treated at a hospital, but instead all were treated by a private physician. Not only did these agents have multiple wounds, but three of them had virtually identical wounds, a shot to the left temple that exited through the rear of the head, professional execution style. The autopsy on one of these agents also says a bullet fragment consistent with a 7.62 round was removed. A 7.62 NATO round is the same bullet fired by the machine gun in the helicopter you saw earlier. It would appear that someone in the government wanted to be certain these men were real dead. The autopsy notes that one of the agents suffered a deadly wound to the throat and a cut lip, which the coroner's notes attribute to an attempted field tracheotomy. Yet at trial, Nizan Pirwani, the doctor in charge of the autopsies of these agents, said this was a bullet hole. Interestingly, this particular coroner has been sued numerous times for such things as leaving a person on the table for an hour and a half before realizing the person was alive, and losing a woman's larynx, the portion of the neck most crucial to the strangulation death he was investigating. Yet he was the coroner upon which the investigation of the most heinous crimes in America would depend. It gets worse. Another part of the Treasury report says, Special Agents Bernadette Griffin, Jonathan Zimmer, and Martin Roy were pinned down behind a shed when Special Agent Jordan, who had been wounded in the arms room, staggered over to where they were and collapsed on them. Special Agent Griffin discovered that Jordan's arm was bleeding profusely. She elevated his arm and compressed the wound with her hand until the ceasefire 90 minutes later. These are the scenes that the ATF report was supposedly just describing. These agents aren't pinned down behind a shed, and they are not dodging bullets either. The agent on the ground is half in, half out of a body bag. He did not stagger to that position from any place wearing a body bag, and he is laying there stone cold, unattended by anyone in this scene. The other agents are merely trying to hide him from the camera. According to the final report, agents from the Dallas and Houston SRTs were supposed to enter the front door and clear the chapel. If agents were actually inside the chapel, as the plan called for, it is easy to see how agents were injured by shrapnel and shot, because we found this footage of yet another ATF agent throwing in not one, but two grenades, and shooting into that very chapel. Watch the holes that appear in the glass to tell the difference. Now we will show this again in slow motion. Many of the injuries the ATF received that day were shrapnel wounds. When the Branch Davidians called 911, they were connected with Lieutenant Lynch at the Waco Police Department, and Lieutenant Lynch was connected to government agents who were in the house across the street from the Branch Davidians.
This Lynch. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, this is Lieutenant Lynch. Can I help you?
Lieutenant Lynch is with the Sheriff's Department and has no jurisdiction or authority at the Waco Police Department. One agent who was in the house across the street from Mount Carmel is identified only as Dino and as a state trooper. If he really is a state trooper, then why isn't he identified by full name? Dino leaves the phone for a minute, and he says,
I'm going to hang on here for a second. I'm going to talk to my partner here, Darlene Riddle, okay? I'm going to put her on the phone just while I'm looking to try and get a ride over there.
Okay.
Hang on.
Everything was wonderful.
Good. Just hang in there. You're doing a great job.
Everything is okay on this end so far.
Okay. Does it sound pretty calm?
It does right now. Everything's, okay. They've asked for the news media, and they're worried about the choppers. So if we can get those choppers stuff. And also, Starlene, if and when those choppers, the medevac starts back in there, please let me know so I can advise them, because this seems to be a real sticky point with them.
Okay. They're still at the hospital, as far as I know, with the two that they took off with.
Rita Riddle, who is listed as a witness for the government in the trial, lived at Mount Carmel, as did her brother Jimmy, who was killed in the fire, and her sister-in-law, Ruth Riddle. Are either of these women Starlene Riddle? Another lie of interest is that the government claims to have recorded the telephone calls the day of the raid at the Waco police station when the Branch Davidians dialed 911. But listen as David Koresh dials 911. You can hear the 911 tones on the telephone.
David Koresh here, just a moment.
Okay, here's David.
The police station didn't record this when the call came in. This recording could only have come from a tap on David Koresh's phone line. There was no warrant to tap the Branch Davidian's telephone. This is a violation of Federal Law 18 U.S.C. 2510, and yet another lie. Mike Schroeder, along with Woody Kendricks and Norman Allison, had gone to work the morning of the raid and heard about the raid on the radio. They quickly tried to return home. They were stopped at the roadblock that had been set up by state troopers. Obviously, they would have been searched before these troopers would allow them to enter, and if they were presenting any sort of threat, the troopers would have arrested them on the spot. Instead, the troopers allowed them to pass the roadblock and walk towards home. Mike Schroeder never made it. He was shot 7 times in the back. He wasn't even on the Branch Davidian property. He was some 300 yards away. His autopsy describes his wounds as having been made from distant sniper shots. However, the official ATF report claims that ATF agents approached the men and identified themselves, and that the 3 men began firing at ATF. Doesn't this sound familiar by now? The account we have just provided is from an account written by the government's own agent in the probable cause affidavit filed against Woody Kendricks and Norman Allison, who were indicted by the government for conspiracy to commit murder. Yet the report released to the news media by the ATF and the ATF's official report still claim that these men were trying to shoot their way out of Mount Carmel. Mike's wife and child were inside the house. He had been trying to go home when he was killed. Mike Schroeder's body was left outside for 5 days before it was retrieved with a grappling hook and carried off in a helicopter like the side of beef on a meat hook. In reading the report, each time the ATF is criticized for something it did not do but should have done, it appears to be merely a cover-up of what they did in fact do. Examples. The ATF is criticized for losing the element of surprise, which we have seen was not even an issue. The ATF is criticized for not using customs helicopters, who could have provided better communications and the ability to fire from the helicopter. The ATF is criticized because they didn't have and couldn't use automatic weapons fire. The ATF had plenty of automatic weapon fire.
Some of these scenes, ladies and gentlemen, are visual graphics. And so when they put forth a supposition or a fact, indeed, you have to be able to see the video in order to understand exactly what is being propounded.
Of special significance is a part of the report that says, a superior solution would have been to gain the advice of the Army's Delta Force. Has it come to this in the United States of America that federal agents investigating a tax violation are complaining because they needed machine guns, special forces military training, and tanks to...
And don't forget, folks, Lieutenant Colonel James Bogreitz was the commanding officer of Delta Force.
Waco Tribune Herald began a series of scandalous articles the day before the raid on Mount Carmel. In these articles, the Tribune made the claims we were to hear repeated over and over in the media thereafter, that David Koresh abused children, that he had multiple wives, and that he believed he was God. The source for these stories, no matter whether it was the Waco Tribune Herald telling them or the national television networks, were always the same handful of people. The gents from Australia. The Toms from Australia. Victorine Hollingsworth from England had been inside Mount Carmel during the siege. Surprisingly, she was allowed to leave Mount Carmel and return to England while the siege was still going on. Robin Bunns is a former Branch Davidian member who had a child by David Koresh. This child would be Koresh's only known surviving heir, standing to inherit Koresh's sizable estate. Robin Bunns' mother also claimed to have been one of Koresh's lovers. Robin and her mother are the primary sources for the claims that Koresh had a harem of women. Mark Bro and his wife, originally from Hawaii, but living in Australia. Mark Bro was the source of the original allegations of child molestation. He claimed that he had personally seen a young girl leave David Koresh's bedroom. He also claimed to have received intensive weapons training at Mount Carmel. Mark Bro is legally blind and has been legally blind for a long time. David Jewell, whose ex-wife Sherry was inside Mount Carmel, became active in supporting allegations of child abuse when Mark Bro volunteered to help him get custody of his daughter, Carrie Jewell, by testifying at a custody battle hearing. These were the people that we saw over and over in the media as support for the government stories that the Branch Davidians were some evil cult. Mark Bro is the person who contacted the State Department and the Cult Awareness Network and relayed his allegations. Cult Awareness Network, known by its initials, CAN, targets religious groups around the world for hate campaigns in the media. CAN members always make the same allegations against each group they attack: perverted sex, child abuse, and brainwashing. It reads like a worn-out script that has been repeated so many times against so many different groups. CAN receives funding through the Anti-Defamation League. The Anti-Defamation League was recently indicted in California and Virginia for illegal spying on United States citizens and engaging in covert information gathering activities in conjunction with law enforcement personnel. By saying what CAN wants to hear, disgruntled former members quickly enlist CAN's aid and the media's ear. At the urging of these former members, it was CAN who had complained to Texas authorities that the Branch Davidians were abusing children. Even Sheriff Harwell of Waco knew that these allegations had already been investigated twice and found to be baseless.
There was really no evidence of child abuse. It was only allegations. And again, I say today that we have not ever found any any proof of any child abuse out there.
Rick Ross, one of the Cult Awareness Network's so-called deprogramming experts, had continuous access to FBI negotiators. Shown here is an example of Rick Ross's expertise as a deprogrammer. Rick Ross is a convicted jewel thief and is presently under indictment for kidnapping. He has no known credentials to support his claim as an expert, yet the FBI allowed him to advise on the course of negotiations while ignoring advice from numerous theologians and genuine psychological counselors. The media, without apology, became tabloid sensationalists, regurgitating what the government told them and parading the all-too-willing detractors before us to reinforce the lies. NBC has twice run this excerpt, the same edited scene of bullets coming out of the wall, claiming they obtained a home video called Waco the Big Lie from a man who lived outside the ruins at Mount Carmel.
Roadside vendors include John Ellis, who sells this home video using news footage in an attempt to prove there was a government conspiracy to get the Branch Davidian.
They showed this handwritten label to emphasize that it is a homemade video. Unfortunately, the handwriting on that label is Linda Thompson's handwriting, the chairman of the American Justice Federation. She handwrote the label when she sent a copy of the tape to NBC, the day American Justice Federation finished the tape.
And ladies and gentlemen, the tape is a professional production. The voice you hear, the woman who's doing the narrating, is a professional narrator. Linda Thompson assembled the footage. She took it to a professional editing house. She hired a professional to narrate the video. This was not a home production, and NBC damn well knew it. And you better know it too.
June, and not only has refused to show it, but is instead committing fraud to discredit it. Not only do we have press that cooperates with the government and lies to us, we found three instances where unlawful force, including deadly force, was used at Waco by the government to keep the press out. On the day of the raid, an unidentified reporter was beaten. This is an inexcusable and illegal abuse of the right of the free press. And why would the ATF risk beating this reporter in this manner? We can later see the body of an agent in a truck. This is the same body and truck that were later filmed leaving Mount Carmel in scenes shown on the news. What is interesting, however, is that there don't appear to be any other cars in the area as there were after the raid. So the time this scene was filmed is important to learning when this agent really died. When Linda Thompson was leaving the press area in Waco, she was stopped at one of the roadblocks and detained by this ATF agent, who kept an MP5 submachine gun, his finger on the trigger, pointed at her head in the car. She snapped this picture and hid the film before the ATF agent illegally searched the car. Another example of how the government deals with the free press that aren't hand-picked to tell you lies. And if the Branch Davidians, after being fired upon by helicopters, having their windows broken in, grenades thrown into their homes, and ATF agents firing upon their children, did finally fire back, they have Texas law on their side, which says, Texas Penal Code, Subchapter C, Article 9.31, Self-Defense. The use of force to resist an arrest or search is justified if, before the actor offers any resistance, the peace officer uses or attempts to use greater force than necessary to make the arrest or search, and when and to the degree the actor reasonably believes the force is immediately necessary to protect himself against the peace officer's use of or attempted use of greater force than necessary. The FBI quickly moved in to seal Mount Carmel from the world. Before the day ended, an armored personnel carrier was brought in, and the Branch Davidians' communications were quickly cut off, making sure the world would not know the Branch Davidian side of things. The FBI had no warrant allowing them to block any communications whatsoever, yet the Branch Davidians' phone lines were immediately cut off and routed directly to the FBI. This is a felony under Title 18 of the United States Code, Section 2511. The FBI knew the Branch Davidians had ham radio and CB equipment and jammed these communications illegally as well.
That's it, folks. The gist of it is, and all of the proof that anybody has ever been able to muster is, the United States government murdered the Branch Davidians. Murdered the Branch Davidians. murdered the Branch Davidians. Murdered the Branch Davidians. Stay tuned tomorrow night for part two of Waco 2, The Big Lie Continues. Good night. God bless you all. Annie, I love you. Pooh and Allison, I am your father. I love you. I miss you. I cherish you. I think about you always. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, Congress, the Justice Department, the President, with an executive order, has no authority to amend the Constitution. If you come home and find an armed person in your home, whether they be federal, state, county, or municipal agents, if they have a gun, you have the right to kill them, for they are a threat to your life. If you find anyone in your home without your permission, without a warrant, who apparently broke in during your absence, kill them, shoot them in the head. G. Gordon Liddy was right. He was absolutely right. If they come to your home, they do not announce a warrant, they don't knock on your door, they do not behave in a lawful way, when they break down your door, shoot for the head. Kill them. Kill the Nazi jackbooted, stinking scum. Remember, this is the United States of America. Kill them. And kill them just as thoroughly and as quickly as you can. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, we must support legitimate and constitutional law enforcement. And any law enforcement officer, in support of his duties, who is acting in a legitimate, constitutional, and lawful manner, you must help him, you must aid him if he needs help, and if he's coming after you, you must submit to him. Any action by anyone, no matter who they claim to be, that is illegitimate, unlawful, and unconstitutional, you are free, not only free, but obligated to resist with the force of arms or any of the force that you have available to you. If you don't believe me, read the writings of the Founding Fathers. You'll see. Illegal, unlawful, Nazi jackbooted thugs of the Internal Revenue Service. Don't file, don't pay ever. And to all of you Nazi jackbooted thugs within listening distance, I'm waiting for you.